But we thought just on the night train we'd do something slightly different tonight. We all love our sport. We all switch on, don't we? I know there'll be a lot of people probably around about 9:30 getting ready to settle in and watch the opening game of the 2014 NRL season. Well, the first people we see are the presenters. And we love certain presenters. We have an opinion on others. It is so subjective. Some look just natural. Others just look a little anxious and just not that comfortable. Others, they bring a bit more theatre to the table, but you wonder whether the sincerity is there. We're going to look at the presentation of sport this hour. We're also then going to expand the discussion and look at how important it is these days for athletes and sportsmen to be good in front of the camera. Is it a prerequisite? In studio, we have one of the best experts in the country. He runs a company called Presenters Platform, www.presentersplatform.co.nz. Paulus Romine, good evening. Welcome to Radio Sport. Thanks for taking the time. Thanks for joining us in studio.
Thanks for that marvellous introduction, Mark.
Okay, first thing I want to ask you, presentation, being good on TV, is it an art or is it a science?
I reckon it's a mixture of both. It's a learned skill. So the art is the aspect that it's right brain. You want to express your own personality and have your own point of view. You can't be anything but yourself. The science comes into the facts of knowing your details. So that's why a lot of ex-sportsmen become presenters, because they know their material. The other aspect of art is that you have to collate your thoughts and also be understanding of what the audience is perceiving, what you're saying, and keeping their attention.
So it's getting them engaged. And so a lot of that too, I imagine, I mentioned that, some bring a lot more theatre to the table. But how much of it is theatre?
It's absolutely a lot of theatre, but you can't be anything else but yourself. So when I'm working with actors, quite often they go into presenting as they start acting as a presenter rather than being themselves. So you can't be anything else than yourself. So the apprehension when you see people struggling sometimes in front of camera is they're finding their way. So a lot of the time we learn by doing, but also that practice makes perfect.
So can dull and boring people become presenters?
Absolutely. No, I wouldn't call anybody dull and boring. Everybody's got a story to tell.
But I mean, you say that, but I'm just talking from a perception point of view, and perception these days is reality. I mean, the politically correct thing is to say, yeah, not everybody's, no one's really dull or boring. But
well, you need to see that for yourself. When you're watching yourself on screen the first few times and you notice what you project, and a lot of people don't know what they actually project on a day-to-day basis. So it's a really important skill to develop, that you understand what you project, whether you're presenting sport, going for a job interview, or any form of communication, really.
So you need to understand what you project, and then I think you need to be realistic, do you, in terms of then perhaps the medium or the niche that you probably would best fit into?
Oh, absolutely. You've got to know your niche. You can't just start randomly talking about stuff you don't know. So you have to develop your niche, and that's a skill in itself, that you can actually brand yourself in a niche market. So if you're a person from rugby league background or cricket background, of course you're going to specialise in that subject matter. But then you've got the aspect of somebody like John Kirwan that has made huge inroads in talking about his personal issues and what amazing insights and help he's provided for people based from his rugby background, now talking about personal stuff.
I mean, when I grew up, it was very much Television 1 and Television 2, and there were a group of key broadcasters, the likes of Brendan Telfer, Keith Quinn and stuff, who very much presented most of the sport we got. But you talk to these guys, they were trained, they went through various programs, they learnt as they went. These days, there doesn't seem to be the same emphasis so much in terms of being good at it. Often, and look, I'm going to be a little bit crass here, but often there's very much a tits and teeth type mentality when it comes to the women's side of it, and we see a lot of former sportsmen just being dragged in front of the camera. Do we work hard enough in terms of getting these people up to speed?
Well, the old school guys would have gone to broadcasting school, so they would have practiced, spent years training before they actually went public. So these days when they meet people and they say, oh, you can do it, and they're just chucked in the deep end, that's tough. Because basically, public speaking or being on camera is one of the hardest things to do, that you come across naturally. So it's an art to develop those skills. So anybody these days with YouTube, the internet, that you have an opportunity to promote yourself and your sport. So I think it's an important thing that you develop these skills. It's a professional thing that people need to do, because you have to abide by sponsors, you have to abide by your fans, and it's your responsibility. Once you're in somebody's living room on TV, they have ownership of you. That's why when you're walking down the street and you see somebody, you think they're your best friend, because they're in your living room talking to you one-to-one. That's the big thing when you're talking to people. It's a one-on-one conversation. So it's very intimate. So that's a big thing to be aware of. It can be confronting, but once you feel comfortable in yourself and realize what you're projecting and you're happy with your message, you always think before you speak. It's a given. So sometimes in a situation of crisis or a place where you have to actually articulate your thought processes, it takes some thought to see how you're going to respond to certain things, that you don't overreact.
I mean, you run presenting courses where you take people and I guess get them to open up a little bit. What are the common barriers that most people put up that prevent them from being the best they can be initially without, you know, obviously those barriers come down the more time they get in front of the camera?
Yeah, absolutely. You said it before that it's subjective whether you like somebody or not. So getting, most people fear the aspect of public speaking or a camera because they fear judgment from the audience. Most people are listening and there is perception of judgment, but most people, once you're into what you're talking about, they're just listening to what you're saying. And if you have an opinion, that's a good thing. Whether people argue for or against it, that's okay. But that's the main thing that people feel intimidated. It's a self-consciousness that holds people back. So a lot of people that come and see me don't feel as if they have a voice. They don't feel as if they have anything to offer. And once you unlock them and give them that detail, which is the science about it, and you find something they hook into, then everybody's got something to say.
Okay, so how do you unlock it? I mean, you've touched on it.
Takes time. So as I say on my website, you don't change your behaviour overnight. To get any good at something, it's immersion. So I equate it to sport. So professional sportsmen, they train every day. Presenters train. So before every time you present, you develop a script, you think of your content, you research detail, and then you're on, and then you psych yourself up about how you have a clear head that you can absorb information. Because when you're nervous, and I can see it sometimes when, you know, people are interviewed during a sports game or at halftime, which is very difficult, that your brain waves move faster and it's very hard to absorb information. So the art as well is the art of listening. And that helps with everything in life, that you can actually hear what people are saying.
Yeah, Murray Deeker gave me some advice before I came on here. He said, God gave you two ears and one mouth. He wasn't stupid. And that was very much coming back to that point. You've got to be able to listen.
It's very good advice. You learn to listen. So in life, we're often thinking, oh, what am I going to say, rather than actually listening to what the person's just said.
Okay, so let's look at sports people these days. I mean, I say that sport is, you know, professionalism, it's more than just playing sport and getting paid. It is a state of mind. It's so much greater than the sum of its parts. Mm. And these days, you look at our media, it's becoming a lot more tabloidy. Often the stories are more about what happens off the field rather than so much on the field, whether it be going into someone's personal life or obviously to do with controversy away from it. How important is it these days that athletes start thinking about media training?
Well, it's most important because you have a responsibility to your sponsors and your fans, the profession. If you're getting paid well, then you need to cover all gambits of your skill base. And then there's also a thing that it can develop the skills that you can go into broadcasting, develop a career path, endorsing products, Lisa Carrington doing the Southern Cross ads. Look, it's obviously paying her way. So it's another way of actually earning money and developing a career path after your sport. You see it with the cricket, all the ex-England cricket captains presenting. A lot of ex-sports people, the next following on thing for their careers is to become a broadcaster.
Yeah, but is that fair though? I mean, have we moved too far in that direction where all our broadcasters now are former athletes? I mean, is there room these days for the broadcaster who has come through the school, who is polished, who, you know, might have that theatre background? I mean, there are obviously guys around at the moment, the likes of Stephen McIver from Sky Sport, who I think do a really, really good job. But, you know, we're starting to see Sky now being filled by former rugby players leading a lot of these particular sports shows. And
We see Sky. We have the Mulligans and the Koutsanises. They're presenting. They don't have a particular sporting background, but they're good presenters and they have the knowledge base. So great with sports sometimes is to have an independent view. And you were talking about the female perspective as well. You see the footy show. The Australians understand that with rugby league, and I'm sure New Zealand does as well, that you need a female perspective to help brand your sport with a more competitive market with lots of different sports. How are you going to have that edge that you're going to get more bums on seats, basically? And that's having all bases covered. So the footy show, for example, very well done, very respectful, integrating the relationships between their wives, having a few female presenters that obviously aren't rugby league players. And it comes across very well and very respectful and a lot of self-deprecation and highly entertaining.
How difficult is it for women to break into sports presenting, do you believe?
Oh, of course it's difficult because, of course, male perspective has always been predominated, but it's it's like every avenue, it's like business or anything, that females have a chance to have their say and their perspective, because now with the market these days, you watch the football, there are as many women as men going to the football, and actually female sport is as entertaining and developing a professional aspect to things. So they're half the population, if not more apparently, in New Zealand. So it's an important market, especially for the sponsors and everybody else watching.
It is 19 and a half minutes after nine. You're on board the night train. You're listening to Radio Sport. This hour we are putting the spotlight and focus on the presentation of sport and looking at whether or not media training is almost a necessary requirement these days as a professional athlete. Paulus Romine from the company Presenters Platform, an expert in this field, is my guest in studio. If you've got any questions, you're just curious in regards to, I guess, bettering yourself from a communication point of view, what goes into it behind the scenes, any little curiosity, any questions you've got, 0800 82 55 77. 23 minutes after nine here on Radio Sport, we are putting spotlight and focus on sports television presenting and whether or not athletes these days in the world of professionalism need to be good in front of the camera. Is it a skill set they need to pick up to endear themselves to fans, to possibly enhance their chances in regards to commercial opportunities outside of their paychecks they receive through their particular sport or sports body? Paulus Romine, who runs a company called Presenters Platform, is my guest in studio. Paulus, you talked about, you know, I asked you the question whether this is an art or a science. Is it something that it just comes naturally, or is it something that you can learn? And you believe very much it is something you can learn. Everybody can do this, but it's like anything. You need to train, and you need training. How much?
Oh, as much as possible. You've got to put the yards in. It's like becoming a professional sportsman. They put the yards in, hours and hours of training.
But somebody that's just wanting to get into television, they're putting the hours and hours in. I mean, not everybody's given the opportunity. You want to, say, maybe go for an audition. You want to be the guy that's given the break or the girl that's given the break. How do you train for something when, you know, there's, what, do you do it in your bedroom with a camera set up? How do you do it?
You can do that, but you always need objectivity. The problem with iPhones these days is that everybody's filming themselves, so they don't get any objectivity. They all think they're fabulous, because actually when you watch yourself back on screen, it's actually, oh, it's not as bad as I thought, often is the case. So, but you need actually to have objectivity or direction. You've had lots of good advice. I've had lots of good advice from mentors. So seeing how you come across and how you develop those skills. So when you go up for a screen test for the possibility of a job, that you have it covered. It's a bit like going for a trial for a game, that you have the skills down pat. So under pressure, you just react instinctively. So working in a confidential environment, so you can just practice and doesn't matter. You watch yourself back. Nobody likes watching themselves back. Nobody likes the way they sound, and everybody thinks their short-term memory is stuck. So basically developing those skills and actually changing your ability to absorb information is the most important thing. And when you're in a relaxed state, it's amazing how much you can absorb. So the trainers, we give you lots of information and then you regurgitate it in an entertaining way in 2 to 3 minutes. And as you get better, it can be 10, 20 minutes and getting that detail. So some people don't have enough detail and some people over-explain. So those are skills to develop. So we do that with...
Yeah, I mean, we will get caught up in the trap here in radio where we start out and we probably talk too much at times, and sometimes less is more. Our questions can be really long-winded. You can get the same question out in probably half the time or even a third of the time, and you learn that as you go.
Well, repetition is good because it drums the message through, you know, because people are a bit slow on the uptake sometimes, so it's good to repeat things sometimes.
Yeah. Now, okay, so you talk about having somebody there objectively to listen to you, to give you some sort of feedback. Because, I mean, you're 100% right, even in radio, you don't like to listen to yourself back. You think you sound absolutely awful. Some people say, hey, I do sound awful. You know, others that have, I guess, more of a stereotype, natural type of radio voice. But I always got a piece of advice from Martin Tasker from Television One. He said, you're never as good as you think you are, but often you're never as bad as you think you are. And I think we all tend to dwell on the negative a lot of the time, don't we? And if you dwell on it too much, you get yourself into a negative headspace. It can become a bit of a mental block and you can get very down on yourself.
Oh, absolutely. You can. The biggest point that people is too self-critical. They're too worried what people think and they're too critical of themselves. Once you let that go, that's a big release. But getting used to observing how you work on scripted material, dual presenting. So often when you're watching sport, there's three people or two people standing in a row. And the people that aren't talking are often just looking at the camera. Now, that's an art in itself to get used to that, because you feel compelled to look at the other person. You can kind of glance at them, but getting used. And people practice that. They don't just don't throw them in the deep end. They actually practice that stuff before they go on.
Two people in front of a camera is very much, I guess, a three-way conversation, isn't it? It's acknowledging the person that's talking, but then also acknowledging the audience that are looking at you. So, say it's Gordon Tallis talking to Lockyer. Lockyer asking the question. Tallis will reply. Lockyer will look at Gordon Tallis. Tallis will give the answer back and then probably still keep talking, look at the camera if he's been trained well.
Yes.
Equally at the same time, Lockyer will be listening to the answer Tallis is giving but also looking at the camera on occasions.
Well, that takes practice because you've got to learn to listen, also look at the camera, and then you can get the possum stare where you're actually just staring at the camera. And if you haven't practiced it before, you'll just be going, oh, did you say something? And I've seen a few lots of bloopers reels like that where the co-presenter has gone off on tangents and not been listening to the other person and lost their cue. So everything is cued that you understand when you come in and when the other person has finished talking and that you have your point of view. So even when you're debating something, allowing the other person to talk and then having your point of view. But having a point of view is vital, that you just don't sit on the fence. And New Zealanders struggle with having a point of view across the board, I find. So getting used to having an opinion, but thinking it through that it's still constructive.
No problem here.
Yes.
None whatsoever, Paulos, even on television.
That's what I like about you. You've got an opinion. We like people with opinions.
Well, it is just an opinion, isn't it? Yeah, I always say to people, don't listen to Talkback Radio if you don't like opinion.
Absolutely.
Why do you listen?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, what about those moments? And look, I know I've been there on occasions when you freeze. When you just sit there and, again, you think you don't have any short-term memory, your anxiety levels are still up, you're still not that comfortable, and you thought you had it all sorted, and your brain is running at 100 miles an hour. At 1/100th of a second feels like a minute.
Does. So a couple of seconds can seem like a lifetime. But if you've prepared and you've practiced, you've thought about what you want to talk about, and then you're in a relaxed state, it will come back to you. And that they will get better. But you actually learn from your mistakes like that. I saw somebody was doing a public speech once and he had this long pause at some stage halfway through his keynote speech. And it felt to him like an eternity. It was probably about 10 seconds. Everybody came up to him at the end of the speech and said, that was brilliant, because it gave us time to absorb what you just said. So people, you know, using deliberate pauses is an effective way to get a message across rather than umming and ahhing.
In that, standing up, okay, presenting. I mean, presenting is not just always necessarily in front of a camera, as you alluded to. It can be MC work, it can be delivery of a speech and stuff. Again, theatre, it's often the way you use your voice, it's often the way you use your face expressions, your hand expressions. Is the get out of jail card the interview situation? I'm happy to talk, but you interview me.
Oh, that's the easy option. So we said that before with dual presenting. It's easier because you've got somebody else, you've got a support network. When you're a solo, that's the most pressure because you're on the whole time. There can be no gaps. It's a bit like radio, not having dead time. So when you're presenting on camera or speaking, you're it. So allowing your, and so on camera, you don't have any pauses because you don't have any audience participation or feedback. So that's a tricky thing to get used to, that you have to keep the energy and the flow up. And we often say when we're writing material, it's about 3.5 words or 3 words per second. So in a minute, you can say 180 words, and that's a lot. So it's amazing how quick you can speak and retain stuff, because quite often people will be too deliberate when they're speaking and that just reduces the energy. So basically the fluency, understanding vocal levels is most important, because often when I'm practicing with people, they can be really quiet. They can be really demonstrative when they're talking in general, but once the camera's on or the radio mic's on, they tend to go quiet.
Yeah, it's funny when you do watch yourself back on camera at times, you almost realise I even needed to be even more animated than I was. Sometimes you think you've been animated, then you can sit back and go, hang on a minute, I needed to be even more animated, and I actually need to smile a bit more.
Smiling always shows credibility. White teeth. First impression, white teeth. Apparently shoes. Women look at men's shoes, but I went out and bought a new pair of shoes straight away when I found that out.
Yeah. Paulos Romine, an expert in presenting, all different platforms of presenting. In fact, this company's called Presenters Platform. And if you are, I guess, keen, you want to get into some broadcasting, or you just want to better yourself, you want to become better in the terms of the way you might present at conferences and the way you present in terms of a sales pitch, I do recommend catching up with Paulos. The company or the website is presentersplatform.co.nz. That's presentersplatform.co.nz. Look, Paulos is here through to 10 o'clock tonight. If you've got any questions, anything that you're curious about, you've heard the discussion so far, 0800 82 55 77. You can text us here on 5009.
The Night Train. Call 0800 82 55 77. Radio Sport.
24 and a half minutes away from 10 o'clock here on Radio Sport, Paulus Romijn, who is an absolute expert when it comes to developing people. He's got a company called Presenters Platform. So it's about getting people to remove those sort of barriers that we all put up and learning the skills of presenting yourself in front of a camera, presenting yourself better in a business forum, basically projecting yourself, bringing you out in a way which is confident, which is going to get people excited, which is going to get people engaged. Is that the best way of probably defining it?
Yeah, it's very good. We always think about school when we went to school, and we had all these guys we went to school, or girls, and we met people that had a certain amount of talent, and if they were, there was sporting or education or whatever. But it wasn't just their talent that got them through. So I like my soccer, Romijn's a Dutch name, and one of my cousins, Richard, played for New Zealand at some stage. And somebody like Ryan Nelson, I don't think he was the exceptionally talented, skillful player, but his work ethos is amazing.
But is that not a talent?
That is a talent, but his technical talent was not compared to some other places, like the Roas and the different characters, but his work ethic and his discipline and his leadership, and probably the way he articulated himself in the dressing room, was inspiring. And that's what created a professional career for him that went on to coaching. So actually developing your communication skills, I'm sure all the coaches, when they go for their jobs, they have to pitch their vision.
Do you think All Black captains and a lot of high-profile captains are picked because of the way they project themselves? Or do you think that coaches tend to still base it personally on their skill level?
I think rugby still is the skill base for that. But Graham Murray was one of the first people that was a good person that could articulate his thought processes. And he was a unique character in that perspective as well. And so he started off.
It's not going to do you any harm, is it, as a captain, if you can build your charisma?
Absolutely, and it's also good for you too. If you can actually articulate yourself and assert yourself, whether it's in the dressing room or with your coach, we see that these days with shared leadership. I was watching this sport the other day in the German national soccer team. The players were saying we have a modern perspective where the players have their inputs, the coaches take heed of that, and so everybody has a say. And that's kind of like how the business world operates these days. So time and place everybody has their inputs and their say. And if you're a bit quiet and you don't have your say, you'll start getting resentful and you'll start holding back and things will turn to custard.
Yeah, see, I did a lot of MC work for Auckland Rugby 2 seasons ago for the ITM Cup, just MCing their sort of sponsorship lunches during games and stuff. And one thing they had a policy on, they did very, very well, is the moment the game was finished, two players had been nominated prior to the game, had to come up on stage, had to address the sponsors, had to thank them, and I did a little bit of Q&A with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're often the guys they sent up were the quietest and shyest guys, very much for that reason, just to allow them, in a controlled environment, to just start developing
that
ability to communicate.
To start doing it. Although sometimes if you push somebody into it and they're not right, that can set them back. They can lose confidence.
So you've still got to do it. Yeah, you've got to do it slowly. I mean, you don't want to miss. I mean, what is the pathway? I mean, how long's the? I mean, we talked about the process. It's just work, work, work. But I mean, I have the saying in sport that you don't want to miss the middle stages of development. I use triathlon as an example. We get a lot of guys who come in at 18 or 19, want to be Olympic distance athletes, suddenly realise how quick you've got to run, are not patient enough, so suddenly look to the Ironman and think, well, that looks easier. You don't have to be quite as quick. It's all more endurance based. But it's still got to be a natural progression. You still don't want to miss out on those middle stages of development in terms of getting to that level.
It's a balance between training and doing. So a lot of the doing that you do initially, you do it unpaid. It's a bit like anything. Why should you be paid to do something? So reaching that professional level where you take ownership, where there's no doubt you take possession. So if you're emceeing an event, you've got your script down, you go in and rehearse, and you've got all bases covered. And that's the professionalism of it. And they do. And it's the same with sports commentating or coaching, that they've got all bases covered. So when they're going in and doing the pitch to apply for a job, they've thought it through. They're not just going to just turn up based on their history that they've done it before, that they actually can articulate the reasons why they're any good. And that doesn't come naturally to New Zealand's of self-promotion. That's a big thing. You see that in America and Australia, they're much more
brash.
That's not brash, demonstrative, I would say. They're used and they put a lot more emphasis on media training and speaking. Whereas in New Zealand, we have speaking at schools and things like that. When push comes to shove, though, that is something we avoid. Because I think a lot of people fear the media. They see it as a threat, so they find it, oh, they're out to get me, rather than seeing the camera or any opportunity to speak as an opportunity to promote yourself or promote your sport, whether it be a high-profile sport or even, you can imagine with minority sports, how is it going to increase their profile unless they have advocates for it and speakers for it?
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you take a guy like Steve Gurney, the coast-to-coast guy. I mean, multi-sport still, you know, not really mainstream in terms of media. But I'd argue that Steve Gurney's personality put a lot more emphasis and focus on the Spates coast-to-coast, also more than the fact that he actually won the race 9 times.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Gurney was a great person for the coast-to-coast because it just increased the publicity for it, because he spoke all the time, he was passionate about it, and he was always available for the media. And so all they're saying, oh, I can do that.
Because let's talk about certain TV shows. What are the TV shows, in your opinion, the sports shows, in your opinion, that it's very much the presenters that make the show?
Well, you see that with Mark Richardson and Mulligan. It's a highly entertaining show. Rick Solisso gets them to express their personality, have an attitude towards each other, and people love that sense of one-upmanship. And it's a very New Zealand psyche. And they've tried to replicate that a few times, hasn't always quite worked, but it works very well with those kinds. And then having Maconian, having the fall guy, and then the new guy who does, I don't think has a sporting background, but he's funny and he's himself. So it's a nice balance. It's an entertaining show. So it's subjective whether somebody likes it or not, but it works for New Zealand.
See, the one guy I think who stole the show always on every TV show that he did was Mark Ellis.
Yes, and Mark Ellis was a very confident young man and still is, and he's made a living out of speaking and self-promotion, and he's a very successful person. And I think part of the reason why he's successful is he knows how to self-promote. So when he was running Charlie's, he was very active with promoting that business. So good on him. But it's certainly, it was part of his success as being able to be in the public eye.
Code on Māori TV.
Code.
Very popular sports show. Have you seen that at all?
And that's about, is that the netball?
No, just Code. It's just it's basically just a good, fun, light-hearted sports show that I would love to see, not just on Māori TV, actually spread across a couple of the other...
No, I actually haven't seen the Code. I saw the netball Code, and I thought that was insightful about the progress of the Adelaide team before the finals, and that was all filmed in the dressing room and everything. And you see that with the Premier League soccer, they have their own show, Manchester City TV, now that it's not on Sky Live, that we're watching. And the interviewers are women interviewing ex-soccer players, thousands of, you know, lots of interesting characters, whatever happened to. And it's insightful and it's personable and it's fun.
New Zealanders get a lot of criticism, I guess, sometimes for their thick Kiwi accent. I know that international broadcasters, particularly Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, prefer the Australian accent, the lighter Australian accent sometimes, the more the Kiwi accent when they're looking at bringing in commentators for the international feed. Elocution lessons, those sorts of things, are they areas you can work on?
Absolutely. Voice is most important. Doesn't mean you have to be BBC like the old school things and still having your voice. But I think the internationalism of it is that New Zealand's a smaller place. We have less broadcasters. So people just getting used to the New Zealand accents. I've had lots of people going to speak in the States and people couldn't understand them. So I think that's just an international aspect of things, that people aren't used to hearing the New Zealand dialect, whereas the Australian accent is a little bit more well heard across the world. So that's just conditioning, but actually working on your voice. You don't want to put a false voice on. You want to start all going all posh and so you can be heard. And I've seen that a lot of times when people start talking, they had elocution lessons at school and they start putting on a posh voice and everybody goes, oh, that's false. It's another thing about being genuine. You can only be yourself.
Yeah, I just speaking with the voice and looking at that side of things, I'm still guilty of it because my brain works at 100 miles an hour, and that's your pace, getting your pace right. And often when you are nervous, you speak quite quickly.
Oh, pace is an interesting one. Often when I'm working with actors that want to present, and you see that with a lot of commercials, often they're too deliberate in their speech. So we still want to have a balance between keeping our fluency and our articulation. And that's just about listening to yourself back. You see that with voice recordings in a recording studio, so you can hear yourself back to sort of see that it's coming across clearly.
Yeah, see, I'll often think, oh, I had a really good show tonight, and then I might occasionally go and have a wee listen back on the website, and I think, no, mate, you spoke far too quickly.
Oh, you can. You
are. And it was far too jumbled, and there was too much information put out there in one crack. Slow it down, Mark.
So at least you know.
Yeah. It doesn't always mean that I always come in and do it every night. I
mean, if you get excited, we still want to see it, that you lose consciousness and you get excited and you just get into it. We see that with those commentaries when the commentators just get completely into it and nobody minds. As long as you're into it, it's the most important thing.
How much should you analyse yourself, though, before it becomes sort of paralysis by over-analysis, where you can, you know, is it just better to listen to it, like you alluded to earlier, with somebody a little bit more objective next to you?
Yes, absolutely. Because a lot of people, as I said, don't like watching themselves back. Even people that are on screen a lot, they actually don't watch their shows back. They find it a little bit. You see that with we saw that with the Hollywood actors. Reason, oh, I can't. You know, I don't watch myself back too much. It's a bit. What do you call it? Incriminating, or it's just people ask.
I'd imagine actors look at it and go, God, I delivered that line terribly. And we're all sitting there going, man, what a wonderful actor.
No, definitely, like Shortland Street actors, they'll watch the programs back mainly to follow what's happening in the storyline rather than to analyse their performance. Because as I said, if you overanalyse it, you'll just kill yourself. So it's not about overanalyzing, but always keep an objectivity. Every time you deliver, you think, oh, I could have done that better. And that's important without being too critical of yourself.
14 minutes away from 10 o'clock. After 10 o'clock, we put the spotlight and focus on the New Zealand Cricket Awards. We'll hear from all the winners. We will bring you those. They have been sitting down with Brian Waddle. We have filed that audio. We'll bring it to you between 10 and 11. And we'll also have the lines open on 0800 82 55 77. But this hour, we are putting the spotlight and focus on presentation. I guess projecting yourself to a level that you perhaps didn't know existed, bringing that inner you out. How important is it for sports stars? How important is it just generally in the business world these days? Sport particularly, so much greater than the sum of its parts. What makes good television? What makes a good presenter? What are some of the barriers that people just naturally put up? How do you break them down? If you've got a question, Paulus Romine from the company Presenters Platform is my guest in studio, who's an expert in this field. His company, you can find it on the website, presentersplatform.co.nz. 13 minutes away from 10. 8.5 minutes away from 10 o'clock, or 9.5 minutes away from 10 o'clock. This is Radio Sport. Mark Watson with you through to midnight tonight. Don't forget, too, to like us on our Facebook page. We've only just set that up. It's The Night Train with Mark Watson. You can keep your thoughts coming here on 5009. Between 10 and 11 tonight, we will bring you all the coverage of the New Zealand Cricket Awards. We'll hear from all the winners, all the recipients of the various trophies and awards that were handed out tonight. We'll also keep you updated on the first game of the 2014 NRL season between the Roosters and the Rabbitohs. But this hour, we've been putting the spotlight and focus on presentation, whether it be in sport, whether it be in business. Paulus Romine, who runs a company called Presenters Platform, presentersplatform.co.nz, is my guest in studio. So, Paulus, people out there listening, still got a few reservations, still are maybe afraid that they're going to, you know, humiliate themselves, embarrass themselves. How do they start?
You start. It's a bit like anything. You get off the couch and you start doing. So in the courses quite often, I always think success is persistency. It's not going to happen overnight. And quite often it's a bit like achieving things in sport or business or in any situation. You never, never give up. Like what Churchill used to say, never, never give up. And it's a bit like that with the creative process, because sometimes people start off young, but of course they don't have the credibility because they're not old enough. But they can do other things in the meantime. So there's a pathway to that. And then at a certain age, you have more credit, et cetera, et cetera. So quite often when people start off, they avoid things because, oh, it's going to cost too much. I don't charge a lot because I don't want people, like we avoid the dentist because it costs a lot. So we wait until one of our teeth falls out before we go to the dentist. And it's a bit like this too. If you're curious about it and want to develop these skills, it'll help you in all facets of life. And then so you start, and I have groups running consistently, and I have 4 stages to my courses, and they're all 25 hours once a week. So basically you learn by doing each week. You reflect on what you've done the week before, and then you're preparing something the following week. And as the courses progress, you can just sort of see the people, as I said before, take possession, have a much more professional perspective of it.
Is it a case of safety in numbers, or are you better to go and get one-on-one tuition?
One-on-one can work specifically for a specific event. Group sessions are great because, of course, working with 4
You can look, lean on each other a little bit
you
too.
Can lean, you support each other, but you also think, oh, I'm really apprehensive about this. And it's a bit like Alcoholics Anonymous when everybody else says, oh, my God, this is really nerve-wracking and I have to introduce myself to camera for 2 minutes. Whew, and everybody else says that. It's a bit of a relief because it just shows it's just not happening to you. You normalise stuff. Like dealing with any anxiety or apprehension, that you normalise it, and then that makes you feel better in itself as well.
I always heard the saying, if you want to rule the world, own the media. And the media at the end of the day comes back to a thing called communication. And so if you want to be good in whatever you do, and you've just said this, obviously it comes down to that. So
oh,
the more you enhance yourself in that field, the better you're going to be in your chosen field. And I used to, when I was dealing with athletes, I'd always say, look, I think you should go along and listen to this particular seminar, whether it be on sports nutrition or exercise physiology. I said, look, 95% of it might go in one ear and out the other, but 5% of it will stay with you forever and make you better at what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve. And I guess for those reasons, we try and encourage as many people as we can to go and see people like yourself, go and see Presenters Platform, and, you know, take out of it. You're going to be better going than you were by just sitting on the couch.
Absolutely. Nothing happens while you sit on the couch. You know, I often see that with people, and they get an agent or something like that, and they think, oh, I'm going to receive the call. You know, you have to keep proactive. You have to promote, self-promote yourself, create YouTube links, websites, constantly promoting yourself, because the whole learning is when you first see yourself on screen, the physical tension, that's why you need to watch yourself back. Oh, my goodness, I've seen people with locked jaw frowning. So what happens when people get too serious? And that happens a lot in business or even in sport. They want to get it right. So what happens when they get serious? They stop smiling, they start frowning, they get locked jaw, and it just becomes this intense, serious thing. And how do we respond to somebody that serious? Badly. So it's keeping a balance.
Well, you get that cringe factor, don't you, at times if it's too severe?
You can smell the fear.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's the skill in itself, that you can understand what fear you project.
I mean, you're sitting here, Paulus, it's quite obvious, mate. I've got a face for radio. Do you need to be attractive? Do you need to be good looking? Do you need to have the looks? Is there a job for everyone?
There is an aesthetic element to it, but basically that's in your physical health. To keep a clear head and to feel comfortable in yourself. In today's market, an aging market, the looks thing is an element of it, that you keep healthy in yourself to keep a clear head, but also for your own self well-being. So you feel better in yourself. And if you feel better in yourself, of course, you're going to project a better image as well. So definitely there's an aesthetic element to it, but it's not an overriding thing anymore. And we see that with lots of people. Once they feel comfortable in themselves and they're not worried what people think, that's why we always admire people on screen, because they've already gone through that image issue. And that's why we're accepting of them, because they're not worried too much about what they look like.
We've only got a couple more minutes. I'd imagine too, some advice if people are still, you know, maybe wanting to just get used to standing in front of people, even if you've just got to get up and do a best man speech. I'd imagine that probably just taking opportunities to talk in front of small groups and controlled environments, a bit like a stand-up comic who might go to the smallest club and just practice his routine, it's not going to matter too much. If you do stand up, if you do embarrass yourself, or you feel like you've embarrassed yourself, you might not necessarily have embarrassed yourself.
Often the people that learn the best are because they make mistakes, but it's good to do it during a course so then you don't make those mistakes. But just do it. I even work with people for wedding speeches and best man speeches, and I'll say, here's how we'll approach it. We'll have 5 one-hour sessions. The first session will just be working on the content when I'm chatting to them, because what a lot of people do when they speak, they just go into this manual of what people expect them to say rather than having their own angle on it. So I'll spend the first session just talking to them about the content. The second session will be them writing out the content and then fine-tuning it. Then the third session will be going over it. And then the fourth session will be them trying to memorize it. And then the fifth session is they deliver it and they watch it back and they go, that's not bad. So that's the process of, say, for a speech, that how you prepare it. And you never wear notes. You never have notes. You always learn it, because then you have a connection. Eyes are the biggest connection on screen.
Okay, so Paulos, just finally, people do want to get in touch with you, do want to explore this avenue, do want to better themselves in terms of their presentation and communication skills. Your website is presentersplatform.co.nz. Plenty of information on that website.
Yes,
they can
information
take your number off that website, give you a call, have a chat to you about it.
There's all the details on presentersplatform.co.nz.
Well, it's been a privilege, and thank you for coming in and joining us tonight here on Radio Sport.
Thank you for your time.